A year ago, my wife and I returned to America from 5 years of ministry in Karachi, Pakistan. I cannot adequately express how wonderful it was listening to Lutheran Public Radio's music broadcast each Sunday morning before church service. We still listen.
You can listen to Lutheran Public Radio, sacred music for the world, anytime, day or night, at LutheranPublicRadio.org, Amazon Echo, Google Home, and on the LPR mobile app.
There are times when it is necessary to abandon our humanity to save humanity.
You say eventually you'd replace us. That's the law of nature. So what would you have done?
What did the humans promise you? No matter what you do, you'll never be one of them. You are a...
We are the beginning!
Apes, together!
We are the beginning!
Apes, together, strong!
Have you come to save your apes?
I came for you.
That's the trailer for the new movie, War for the Planet of the Apes. We're going to be reviewing that movie with Pastor Ted Giese. He says it's a mix between the Ten Commandments, that Exodus story from the Old Testament, and the Great Escape. We'll find out what he means by that. Pastor Ted Giese has a bachelor's degree in fine arts. He's pastor of Mount Olive Lutheran Church in Regina, Saskatchewan, Canada. He taught a course for Concordia Lutheran Seminary titled Christianity in the Movies, a Lutheran Approach to Media Consumption. And he joins us to review the movie, War for the Planet of the Apes. Ted, welcome back to Issues, Etc.
Thanks, Todd.
Some people watching this latest in the Planet of the Apes movies, War for the Planet of the Apes, might feel the strong implication from the film of anti-Christianity. Would they be reading too much into it?
Maybe. Maybe not. This is one of the really interesting things about this movie. There's a lot to unpack, I guess, in the movie itself. You do have the humans cast as villains for the most part in the film, and then they do make them specifically connected to Christianity in a number of ways. So, and then you have, of course, you have the apes. This is a continuation of this reboot of the Planet of the Apes franchise, and the apes again and again are very... you can link them very easily to the children of Israel and the Exodus. So you have like Caesar, the main character played by Andy Serkis, is very much a Moses character. So then you have on the one hand, this kind of, it's very easy then for that to all kind of fall into the bucket of Judaism, I guess, because it's Old Testament and they're so clearly connected to that Exodus story. And then you have, instead of Egyptians and the Pharaoh, in this particular case, you have the Colonel, and the Colonel is played by Woody Harrelson, and he's a Christian. So in his office, you see like very clearly, you see a cross, and they cut to it a number of times. And then on the soldiers, the human soldiers, they have on their helmets the Alpha and the Omega, so the A and what looks like an upside down U, on their helmets, and they have, you know, they say, we are the beginning, we are the end. They kind of chant this out together as soldiers. And of course, you know, it's branded on the apes that are kind of traitor kind of characters that are working with the humans. So this all kind of starts to put them into that milieu of Christianity, and whether they're good Christians or not, I guess, by the works righteousness kind of world standard view of what makes somebody good in the eyes of society, you know, and even just are they fallen into their sin and not out of it, you know, or even trying to be out of it or seeking to do virtuous things or not. This kind of starts to paint these humans as villains, clearly, and they are also then connected to Christianity. So is it anti-Christian in a way? What is this movie about, I guess, is the thing that people need to ask. Like, is it really a movie about apes and humans? Or is it a movie about the human condition? Is it a movie about faith? Is God involved in it in any way? These are all very good, legitimate questions to be thinking about when you're watching the movie.
The original franchise was kind of a story of sped up evolution reversing itself in some way. But this one has a different quote unquote scientific premise behind the storyline. Well, it tells a similar story. It's a different premise. What is it?
Yeah. And this is again, a very interesting thing. So like 1968, the first of those Planet of the Apes movies, Charlton Heston, it's very much about it. The big reveal at the end is that he's not on some different planet. He's on Earth. Humanity is kind of quote unquote devolved, and the apes have quote unquote evolved, and that's the world that he finds himself in. In this case, it all kind of revolves around, and this was in Rise of the Planet of the Apes in 2011 when it first was rebooted, it revolves around an Alzheimer's drug that was being tested in a laboratory on animals, and it's the testing of this Alzheimer's drug that basically kind of unlocked or triggered in these apes cognitive abilities, and then eventually the ability to speak, which, you know, was unexpected, an unexpected side effect of the drug that they were testing. And now you have the introduction of this idea of a virus also that is kind of connected to that, a simian virus that then has along the way this impact of having cognitive abilities and the ability to speak diminished or removed from humans. So it's setting the stage for what you do end up getting, I guess, in that 1968 film with Charlton Heston, where he finds other humans, but they can't talk and they're not very, very bright. It's setting all of that kind of stuff up. This is like the backstory. It's a reboot, but it's also like the backstory of how things got to where they got. But in 1968, it was all about evolution. And these new ones are all about kind of design. It's human tampering with nature that causes the outcomes that the movie then has as its dramatic setting. And even Woody Harrelson as the Colonel at one point says, you know, we created you. He's talking to the apes, specifically to this Caesar. We created you and nature has been punishing us ever since. So this is an acknowledgement of failure on the part of humankind in terms of like testing things or being involved in things that are not, are beyond the pale for what humans should be involved in. So, you know, we think about stuff connected to genetic engineering and things like that. This is in that kind of realm of things.
So you talked earlier about the striking similarities between the storyline that we're kind of picking up on in this film and the story of the biblical Exodus. But there's some big differences too. What are the similarities and then what are the differences?
Okay, similarities revolve around the character of Caesar and the person of Moses from Scripture. So Moses from Scripture, he, because of who he was born from, a Hebrew woman, he is slated to die. So all of the male children, the Pharaoh had an edict that they should die. And then he's rescued from the River Nile, lives in the lap of luxury comparative to his fellow Jewish people, doesn't even really know that he's Hebrew, doesn't know that he's part of the children of Israel, eventually discovers this, and because of a violent incident that he was the cause of, he runs away. And then he becomes somebody eventually who God gets to come and be the one who speaks for his people, helps lead the people into the wilderness and eventually to the promised land. And he's the lawgiver. He receives the law, gives it to the people. So you have that in the person of Moses, in the person of Caesar, the character from the show. His mother is an ape who has had this Alzheimer's drug. She's passed down to him this improved cognitive ability and eventually the ability to speak. The company says, well, all of these apes have to die because this isn't going the way we thought it was going to go. And then he's rescued. He lives in the lap of luxury, comparatively speaking, compared to the rest of them that live in zoos and laboratories of the apes. Then he ends up helping, you know, an exodus of the apes out of, you know, captivity from the zoos and from the laboratories into the wilderness. And then in the wilderness, he provides them with laws to live by. Ape not kill ape, you know, ape together strong, you know, knowledge is power, these kind of things. So he has the law-giving kind of capacity. And then in this movie, it just continues from there. So again, now you have kind of like that last leg. You know, there's also like Moses dealing with a rebellion. He deals with a rebellion, this Caesar character. So, and then this is the kind of almost like the last leg. So it's not a perfect comparison, but it's so clearly the case that somebody who sat down to write this, the two writers, the director and his writer, they had to have known scripture, or they're working from that analogy, like they're building off of it. And there's some really clear ones, and I don't want to give away the one that comes near the end of the movie, but it's very, very obvious. If you know the Moses story, you see exactly that they're really, really referencing the Moses character, the person of Moses from scripture. So that would be the stuff where it's all very similar. Like right down to, you know, like they're literally the apes end up in a position where they're in captivity and they're put to work to build things and they're not being given water and food. And so, and he has to ask on their behalf for food and water for them. These are the kinds of things you get in the movie, this current one, War for the Planet of the Apes. What's missing though is a obvious revealed God. Like scripture, you have the burning bush, you have God speaking to Moses, explaining what Moses is going to do with the plagues and all of these things. And the presence of God with the people in that way is not in this. There's no pillar of fire, no pillar of smoke. Those things are not there. So it's not a perfect one-to-one analogy. And God is kind of mostly hidden, and there's just one or two little things that kind of suggest that maybe that's not the case. But overall, it's fairly absent from God being a real part of it. Now, a couple of years ago, we talked about Gods and Kings, the Ridley Scott movie about Moses and Pharaoh and the Exodus. And people mostly didn't like how God was portrayed and how God speaking to Moses and God's involvement was portrayed. So maybe they just thought, well, let's just cut that out for fear of not causing offense. Or I would love to pop the hood and see what's going on in the minds of the director, Matt Reeves, and his writer that he wrote with, Mark Bomback. I would love to ask them some questions about how it all works for them on their end of things.
Pastor Ted Giese is our guest. We're reviewing the movie War for the Planet of the Apes. When we come back, 10 more minutes with him. Dr. John Kleinig will join us after that to begin a series on the book of Hebrews, and we'll play Issues, Etc. Soundbite of the Week.
And we're gonna have a ball just like we always do. Saturday night at the movies. Who cares what picture you see?
Your lifeline to the Lutheran worldview. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
What does it mean that Jesus Christ is our great high priest, the greater Moses, and the fulfillment of Old Testament prophecies? The new Concordia Commentary on Hebrews is the Issues, Etc. book of the month. It's written by regular guest Dr. John Kleinig. Browse before you buy at issuesetc.org or call Concordia Publishing House 1-800-325-3040. Your pastor would deeply appreciate the new Concordia Commentary on Hebrews, 1-800-325-3040. Welcome back. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc. We're reviewing the movie War for the Planet of the Apes. Pastor Ted Giese is our guest. He taught a course for Concordia Lutheran Seminary titled Christianity and the Movies, A Lutheran Approach to Media Consumption. The new school year is right around the corner, and Concordia University, Wisconsin is offering 50 online educational options for an associate's, bachelor's, or master's degree. They'll even waive your application fee when you use the promo code ISSUES. Learn more by clicking on the Concordia University, Wisconsin logo at issuesetc.org. Lifelong Lutheran Learning, Concordia University, Wisconsin, online. Ted, before the break, you were, or actually earlier in our conversation, you would ask this question, what is this movie about? And short of asking the playwright and the director, answer your own question. What is this movie about? Is it about apes and humans or about the human condition?
This is very hard. This is a very hard thing because if it's about apes and humans, like animal kind and humankind, then it's really kind of almost in the PETA kind of territory of things where there's misanthropy, like humans are bad, animals are good. The waters get a little muddy though, because you have all the apes are not innocent. You know, there are defector apes, collaborator apes, traitor apes who side in with the humans. So this idea that, you know, that they're somehow perfectly pure and innocent and the humans are the problem, that the apes, the animals have mercy and the humans don't have mercy, that kind of doesn't run clear all the way through the whole story. So it's a little more complicated than that. But it does come across. There's this misanthropy, like mostly all of the humans are not, they're morally ambiguous or they are unvirtuous. There's not very many that would be virtuous at all. There is one of the characters, a young girl named Nova in the film, and she is virtuous and good, but she's virtuous and good because she has succumbed to this kind of, you know, plague that's caused, you know, humans not to have higher cognitive abilities and the ability to speak. So then that would say that the ability to speak and all of this stuff is maybe the root of the problem. And yet that's the direction that the apes are going into. So it's very complicated in that way. And if it's not about animal kind and humankind, actually, if it's not quite on the nose like that, if it's about human nature, then it's much more interesting to me. And I want it to be more about that, if you're catching my meaning. So a lot of times sci-fi can talk about social problems and the human condition in a way that your dramas don't tend to be, don't always get into that. Like, you know, they can kind of say, well, this is just sci-fi, so it's not a big deal. And then they slip in stuff about actual important things. So if that's the case, then it's not really about apes and humans, and it's about human condition, about what the character of mercy, how mercy is experienced and employed in the world, and then also the struggle with vengeance. Like, am I going to be, like Caesar has this question where he has to answer, am I going to be somebody who would jeopardize everything just to get personal vengeance? Is that who I am? That is a question that the character of Caesar has to deal with. And of course he has the ape Kobo from the previous film, Koba, that he has to kind of like, am I like that ape? And then he has in front of him Woody Harrelson's character of the Colonel and then he has to say, am I like that guy? Where do I fit into this? And I think that is maybe more interesting, but it's very easy to be caught in the crosshairs or caught between these two things and say, I don't know what this is about. Is this about apes and humans, like animal kind and humankind, or is this about something different? And I think maybe it actually is about the other thing, about what makes being a human being human. But it's so hard. It's a complex movie in that way.
The first set of films, and everyone refers to that scene that you talked about before, the very end of the first film where it's revealed that the Charlton Heston character is actually back on Earth post-nuclear war. It's really kind of a genius move. I mean, he introduces the idea of the bomb with one line, And everyone goes, oh, I see what happened. They don't even have to tell you what happened.
Mm-hmm.
But it was about man's tendency towards self-destruction. But it doesn't sound like that's the message of the rebooted Planet of the Apes movies.
No, it's much more nuanced than that. It's more, there's more going on in it. Like, I'll have to say, like, you know, previously, like, these Planet of the Apes movies, the first one in 1968 was very good. It was on point, very interesting. And then they kind of slowly, to use the term, devolve. They kind of devolve into this really kind of corny, kind of goofy kind of thing. Like, it gets worse and worse and worse as they go. You know, like, each one gets kind of, like, worse than the next. In these ones, they've been getting richer and more interesting as they develop. So these are much more, better in terms of just, like, you know, they're more thought pieces. There's more going on to dig into. I do find it interesting that they are leaning so heavily on like, the scriptural person of Moses and the Exodus. It's very interesting that they're doing that. But in order to do all of that, then they are also, the great thing is that it's not very shallow. There's a lot more going on in it than you'd expect from a movie about monkeys, right? So, and the CGI special effects and Andy Serkis's job playing the part of Caesar is also very rich and good. So it's not bright and cheerful, but it's definitely a very interesting look at human nature, and not specifically about human nature's ability to destroy itself, but, you know, what is broader, in the broader sense, what does it mean to be a human? It seems to be the thing that they're trying to dig into.
I wanted to ask you about this because this film is a great example of it, but we've been watching it since probably Lord of the Rings and the Gollum character. We have now real actors, and they win Academy Awards for their acting, but you never see their faces, and they're not made up. They're digitally covered over and remapped onto these bizarre characters, and in this case, the apes. And it's really a whole different, when everything you see on the screen is not there, is not real, but somehow they're getting the facial expressions onto these characters. It's hard to call these films anymore, isn't it? And it's really taken acting and what the films can and often do to a different level. What are your thoughts there?
Yeah, I mean, like, much of the movie is really shot in an actual place. So a lot of it's shot in Vancouver, and then there's a place called Tofino in British Columbia also where they shoot. So, like, the forest scenes and things like that, that they're shot in a real actual location. So that is, it gives it a real groundedness to the film. But the work that they do, like, is quite amazing with the CGI. And again, it's improved from the last one, Dawn of the Planet of the Apes. And that was really spectacular. So this is even more nuanced, better in terms of the way that they are capable of getting it together and having it on the screen. Andy Serkis, he's been King Kong, he's been Gollum, he's been, Snoke from the Star Wars movie and the upcoming new Star Wars movie. So he's getting a really a repertoire of these roles. He very seldomly actually shows up on screen with his own actual face. You know, he's going to show up like that in the Black Panther movie that's going to come out for Marvel. He plays a character in that. But one day he's going to probably win an Oscar because he's doing just amazing, amazing work. If he did his own, like, CGI work on the computer himself, if he was tippy-tapping and putting it all in, essentially he would be like the Lon Chaney of our generation. Now, older people listening to Issues, etc. will know who Lon Chaney is. Other people won't. But he was a guy who did all of his own makeup. He played the Hunchback of Notre Dame. And, like, characters like this, he did his own makeup, made himself completely unrecognizable, and then was very famous for it in his acting. So, you know, like, it is really the artistry of it in this particular case is very good. And people who watch movies a lot, if you see bad CGI, computer-generated imagery, you know it. Like, the bad stuff is, like, really cringeworthy, and there's nothing cringeworthy in this film. So the people who are doing the work as, artists, they're excelling in their vocation. You know, they're making something very interesting. Now, what does it mean for us that, you know, like the real world can be so fabricated? You know, that can kind of be disconcerting sometimes too, because does that impact the way we think about animals when we look at the animals in this movie, the way they're being portrayed? And that gets back into that misanthropy and what our connection with the natural world is, and our part in it, I guess, as well.
Pastor Ted Giese has a bachelor's degree in fine arts. He is pastor of Mount Olive Lutheran Church in Regina, Saskatchewan, Canada. He taught a course for Concordia Lutheran Seminary titled Christianity in the Movies, A Lutheran Approach to Media Consumption. And you can read his review of War for the Planet of the Apes under the Listen On Demand page at issuesetc.org. Ted, thanks.
Thank you.
We begin a new series on the book of Hebrews with none other than Dr. John Kleinig, author of the Issues, Etc. Book of the Month for July, the Concordia Commentary on Hebrews. Stay tuned for that.
If you've ever wondered why Amazing Grace is the national anthem of funerals, or pondered the state of your eternal soul after you die, the Lutheran Witness has got you covered. Check out the June-July issue of The Lutheran Witness to learn more about death, dying, heaven, and hell. Not a subscriber? Visit cph.org/trylutheranwitness for a special offer, $6.99 for 6 digital or print issues. The Lutheran Witness, interpreting the contemporary world from a Lutheran perspective.
Emily finally had to face the truth. Her church choir was a mess.
Katie Schuerman from her new audiobook, House of Living Stones.
Sure, they'd managed to turn out a few decent choral offerings for Sunday worship every now and then, but their confidence and morale were presently hanging lower than pants on a wrapper.
You can purchase and download an audio version of the novel House of Living Stones at Amazon, Audible, and iTunes. House of Living Stones by Katie Schuerman.
Spiritual and religious. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
A year ago, my wife and I returned to America from 5 years of ministry in Karachi, Pakistan. I cannot adequately express how wonderful it was listening to Lutheran Public Radio's music broadcast each Sunday morning before church service. We still listen.
You can listen to Lutheran Public Radio, sacred music for the world, anytime, day or night, at LutheranPublicRadio.org, Amazon Echo, Google Home, and on the LPR mobile app.
I bet you didn't know that the teaching of Latin in schools is making a comeback. Latin? Really? Isn't that a dead language? Well, take a look at what studies say about how well Latin students do on a test like the SAT. Memoria Press's Latin program will revolutionize your students' vocabulary, knowledge, and their understanding of grammar. And there is no better subject for teaching critical thinking skills. Visit memoriapress.com and save $5 on your next order by using the coupon code LPR.